Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Oh, yeah. Today we are full of wonderful guests on our show. We've got filmmakers, we've got mood makers, we've got Emmy winners, we've got a real crew. We're going to introduce our first guest. I want to give you a little
my mother for every story that she told, like the time we had no Christmas, said Santa died because he was old. Once she wrecked my car, then denied it all to me. I'm gonna blame it on my mother and on heredity. I'm not gonna blame my mother. In fact, I'm kinda glad. You have to be creative to make up good from bad. She was full of joie de vie, no matter how it affected me. So if I'm gonna blame someone, I'm gonna blame me. Nuts because of your family. You're nuts because you're nuts. Crazy, insane. Who you trying to kiss? Embrace your inner id.
That was me playing fake harmonica. Fake harmonica. It's true. Now our guest we have come. His name is Mr. Sam Barry. He's an author, musician, a publishing professional. He's an author of Rights for the National Authors Enabler. A word hard to pronounce for me this early in the morning. A blog and book page. We've played in bands ever since he can remember, and there are some things he just can't remember. He frequently performs with the San Francisco-based band Los Trainwreck and tours globally with the all-author rock band Rock Bottom Remainder. He's appeared on Good Morning America, The Craig Ferguson Show, and has been a regular performer on radio show West Coast Live. All right, let's hear it, Mr. Sam Barry.
Hey, how you doing?
Good morning, Sam. That was me playing the fake harmonica.
Nancy, that was dynamite.
The fake one.
And I don't think we need the harmonica anymore.
We still need it, Sam, because how else will people get the joy of how to play the harmonica and other life lessons written by you?
Yeah.
Sam Barry, How to Play the Harmonica. I was reading through your book, Sam, just getting right to the book right away because I like to do that. And tell me if anybody else has made this comment. I mean, I have harmonicas. Of course, I believe in the harmonica. I cheat. I have an echo harmonica. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's double the trill.
Yes.
And
double the thrill, yeah.
Double the trill, double the thrill. Sam, as I read through your book, I found it not only informative on how to play, but I got a calming feeling reading this book. Have you gotten that?
I have gotten that. I've gotten a little... I'm trying to make people laugh, but I also sneak a little bit of wisdom in there, wisdom such as there is from a harmonica player.
From a harmonica player, yes. It's the book is very interesting in that it's instructional. Let me just say this, Sam, because you have been playing for how many years now?
Forever.
Forever.
I've been playing since I was a kid, so I've been playing a long time.
A long time. Okay. So as you're playing for all this time, the harmonica, hold on, I have music coming on from another portion of the room. There, it's done.
Oh.
Okay. I have simultaneously things going. You've been playing for how many years? All your life.
Since I was a kid. Since I was 10 or 9 years old.
Is the harmonica generally an instrument that has been one that no one writes music for? In general.
In general, other than like some obscure classical stuff for a chromatic harmonica, or you can play jazz, but really it's always been something you play by ear. Even the great chromatic players are often playing by ear. I'm thinking of Stevie Wonder, Toots Thielemann, and diatonic harmonica.
I know what they are. The chromatic one has a little slide on it, right? And it makes
exactly.
The pitch. It changes the scale.
And thanks, Stevie Wonder. And then the diatonic is, thank everybody, pretty much all the blues harp players, Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, everybody has played the 10-hole, like the Marine Band is probably the most famous model.
Or the Hohner as well, right?
Right, the Hohner, yeah, exactly.
So I know my harmonicas. I bet you didn't think I did.
You do. Well, I mean, yes. I heard you playing the faux harmonica, so I know you.
The faux harmonica. No one plays faux like I do.
Can I just say, Nancy, that was the first time I've ever heard Jean de Vie put into a blues, and also it sounded like Jungian analysis in that blues.
Yes, didn't it? But I seem to cover all the bases and work things out with my hand harmonica. Yes, and it's great because I like to, I mean, you really just pretty much in your book, How to Play the Harmonica and Other Life Lessons, you jump right in there.
I do.
You jump, and I like that you start with playing the single note, don't be afraid. I think the intimidation, I kind of like your idea also, I think that you bring out in the book, is that everyone should explore their music or the music within.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But you're right that I want to make people not afraid. I think the thing about adults in this world is it's a very serious world, and adults have to be experts at so many things that we forget how to have fun and be a kid. You know, and this is something where I'm saying, go ahead, be a beginner and have some fun being a beginner.
Yes, and it's never, you could start at any point. I myself have started learning guitar and bass guitar.
Right.
Because mostly I won them, so I thought I should learn them. But the lessons here are nice, too, and you give a little history. What inspired you to write this?
Well, I was working on a novel. And the novel I was struggling with that. It's something, another project, which I don't need to talk about.
Okay.
It stalled on it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I'll write an instructional book about the harmonica. And that's all it was meant to be originally. But it became much more. I started telling stories. And that's really where this book came from, was I began to tell stories about my life and stories of other people's lives. Some of them funny, some of them, some of them sort of
inspirational, I would say. I would use the word inspirational.
Exactly.
Like your swimming story. And
they just started coming out of me, so I went ahead and wrote it. It was a lot of fun to write.
how do you, I would love to write a book someday, but how do you go about just writing it?
Oh, well, the hint for writing a book is write some every day, write a little bit every day until you have a whole bunch of junk, and then you have to start editing, and that's the really crucial step. You know what I mean? You have to make hone it into something good. So you throw away as much as you keep, but you know that. That's
yeah.
probably true with comedy more than anything else.
Oh, yes. Yes, I am. And you do have comedy, too. Now, have you done any comedy? I mean, performed comedy. I know you play music.
I think, well, that band that you mentioned, the Rock Bottom Remainders,
mm-hmm.
which is a band of famous authors.
Can you tell us some?
I will tell you some of them, like Stephen King and Dave Barry and Kathy Goldmark, Amy Tan, Scott Turow,
wow.
Roy Blunt Jr. That is just a absolute circus, that band, and really is much more comedy than it is music.
Well, I'm seeing here, I love the little quote you have here, and I'm from Dave Barry, who I'm assuming is your brother.
That's right, that's my bro.
He's your bro, and what he said about this book was, buy my little brother's book, or I will give you a noogie.
That's right. Somebody said that was the first, that's on the cover of the book, front cover, and somebody said that is the first time they've ever seen an actual threat on the front cover of a book.
I like that.
I'm actually here in New York to see, he's here and we're here for a family event. My nephew, his son, is getting married. So
what's your son, your nephew's name?
His Rob, and it's going to be a blast. We're going to have a good time. So.
That's great. That's great. Now, again, let's talk about this. So,
yeah.
Hey, does your band have any CDs out?
The Rock Bottom Remainders has, there's a CD that you can get from Don't Quit Your Day Job Records, DQYDJ.com, that would be worth listening to. It has a lot of the Remainders playing on it. But and I have some music online at Samberry TV on YouTube. Yeah, I also do some comedy on there.
Say it slow, because it's not television.
Sam Barry, SAMBARRY TV.
TV.
On YouTube.
But more important, let's right away, because before we forget how to play the harmonica and other life lessons, now that's two of your other websites. What's the website? Is it Red Room? Is that the one?
That's right. My author page is Red Room.
Say it slow, Sam. Say it slow.
I will.
Na-na-na-na.
da, 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 da. I got an author page. Da, 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 da. It's on redroom.com/authors/SAM-BARRY.
Let me just correct that. What I'm seeing is redroom.com/author. No S. Authors?
I think it's with an S. But you know what? If they go to Red Room and redroom.com and search for Sam Barry, they'll find me in a sec.
Find you in a second? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's the important part. We want them to find you, this book. And your wife, Kathy.
Kathy Goldmark, she's an author. And a big part of we do a lot of work together. And we do the Author Enablers blog, which is wonderful stuff. And she's also there on Red Room. But one of the things that I get to in this book, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier,
mm-hmm.
is that there is this sort of a little bit of wisdom, but the wisdom is fun wisdom. Like, I suggest that people can do things the regular way or they can do things the playful way. So an example of that might be, let's say you buy my book and you do
mm-hmm.
want to learn to play the harmonica. You don't have to learn to play the harmonica with my book. You could just enjoy reading it. But let's say you do want to learn to play. So the regular way to get a harmonica is you go to the music store, you ask the clerk for a harmonica, and you buy it. I mean, that's it. That's the regular.
It's the first step to anything is, I think, actually, if you have improvising is a big part of your book. And that, I agree, people don't do that enough. We don't give ourselves permission to play.
Well, that's right. Well, the playful way of buying a harmonica is this. Check this out. You put on your 1940s era zoot suit and dark sunglasses, and you slick back your hair, and you saunter into the nearest blues club. And men can do this too. So, you know, I mean, it's just a lot of fun. Then you talk to all the blues players, and then after you sober up, you download some Sonny Cherry and Brownie McGee songs to listen to on your way to the music store. And then when you get to the music store, you head straight to the drum section and start pounding on everything in sight. Then when they chase you out of there, you run over to the guitar center, the guitar section, and you start playing all those. Be sure to crank up the volume. And once you've got everyone's attention in the store, you go. Then you go over and you buy the harmonica.
So, yeah, after you've pissed off all the salesmen, is that your best way?
That's the playful way. I do, on those, on some of those, I do a whole bunch of these in the book. There's the playful way to do the laundry and the.
Sam, I taught improvisational theater for numerous years and was part of a group called the First Amendment that had a show in New York City that ran for like 13 years. And but improvisation, I agree, and that is a big part of your book. It's a very freeing book in that your kind, gentle way of writing things. So you don't feel like it's one of those motivationals. Go do it. Just go do it.
Yeah.
This is, hey,
yes, you can.
If you're walking by a music store, what the heck? You got $10. Go in.
That's right.
Now, should they buy, because harmonicas come in different keys, is there a standard key? If you were a man, what key would you suggest?
If I were for a man.
You are a man. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, I don't know.
Actually,
let me check.
But for a man, what key would you suggest?
Well, I would.
Because they do come in different keys.
They do come in different keys. I think the easiest thing to do is get the key of C harmonica, which plays, as you probably know,
it's the chromatic scale, yeah.
And it plays blues really well in the key of G. And that's a nice common key, the people's key, we used to call it in folk music. So that's a good one to start with.
Okay.
And here's the thing. If you own one of these 10-hole harmonicas and you learn how to play it, you've learned how to play them all. You switch keys by switching harmonicas, but you don't have to change the way you play it. Do you see what I mean? So you only have to learn how to play one of them to get the whole thing down.
To only play one. Yes, you want to...
You want to own more than one for the various keys.
Oh, yes. I'll tell you a story. Who I used to jam with in my early days of performing comedy in the 80s,
yeah.
Bruce Willis. Now,
oh,
Bruce
cool.
Willis used to have a case of harmonicas.
Yes.
He had a case, and so he would bring out one for any key, and he and I, every night on stage, would improvise a song based on audience suggestions.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It was, and actually the harmonica was the key to, if you can somehow connect this story on your lectures, to his success, because I don't know if you remember what propelled him to the top. He did a Levi's commercial playing a harmonica.
I do kind of remember that commercial. Can I tell you a funny coincidence, Nancy?
Yes.
This, you know, obviously I play the harmonica. I have a case of harmonicas right here in front of me, just like... Bruce's, but the guy who plays drums for the Rock Bottom Remainders, Josh Kelly, mm-hmm. also plays for the Bruce Willis blues band that goes around, like, does USO tours.
Oh,
so I played, it's just a funny coincidence.
Well, tell him you know me.
I know.
He happens to be playing there.
He's a good guy. Yeah, but
no, he's
yes.
a good guy, and he Bruce has a very great sense of humor as well. And really, when I think of him, even as a young man, throwing himself into the harmonica. It was a surprise thing because when he brought out, you play harmonica, everybody kind of says, I kind of play harmonica. But he actually took out the case.
No, he's a good player. So, I mean,
how to play the harmonica in other life lessons, this might propel you into a whole other Bruce Willis world
yes.
if you purchase this book. And that's at www.redroom.com/Sam Barry. But if you go to Red Room, they're going to find it, right?
Redroom.com and search for me. They'll find
yes, Sam Barry. But we're not through yet, Sam. I think we have a caller. Let me see if they're still on the line and see if they have a question. Did they come in? Caller, are you there?
Hello?
Caller, are you there? You know what it is, Sam? Sometimes they can't figure out how to work the computer.
I know. They'll play it blogging. Yeah.
They'll just turn that on. But this is great. Hey, Sam.
Yes.
Let me ask you something. Okay. This book, I'm just thinking with it because, like, as I said, it has a very calming effect. when I'm reading it, I'm not getting. I like the way the fusion of the book in that you go in and out of it. It's a lesson, and then it's a story, and then here's a lesson, a little history of the song, great moments in a harmonica history. When would you say, have you done your research, I'm just checking, the harmonica was invented?
Well, I think I have it being invented several times in that history. There's a little bit of a facetious element to that history, right? But the real invention comes in the 1840s when in Germany they kind of pull it all together and invent this little instrument that we're used to playing now. But it goes all the way back. It really does go all the way back to China. Doesn't everything go back to China? Have you ever noticed that? That every invention goes
back. They have everything?
Yeah. So they had but the modern harmonica was invented in Germany in the mid-19th century. But as you know, Germans are not the ones who are famous for playing the harmonica, Nancy. Americans are. So it just really took off over in this country.
And you said that was 18 what?
Mid 1850, 1840s.
1840s. And I'm going to assume that it was brought over by immigrants.
There was a small portable instrument. Exactly. Well, the guy named Hohner, who you mentioned,
yes,
was sort of the Henry Ford of the harmonica. He started making them, a bunch of them in his kitchen, really. And he sent them to some cousins over in the U.S., and it just took off over here. Because in the United States, it was a inexpensive, portable, little-d democratic instrument, and people just fell in love with it over here.
Actually, the Hohner, I have two Hohners right here in front of me, and the Hohner Special 20 in the key of D, and the Hohner Echo, and they're both made in Germany.
Yes, they're still, Hohner is still making them. They're the biggest company, but what I mean is their biggest market became the United States.
Yes, and during that, so the history of the harmonica, that's good. Let me ask you, so people are going to pick up this book, right? Okay, now, you know the other thing I like about How to Play the Harmonica and Other Life Lessons? I have to say the whole thing, because how to play the harmonica could be anything.
Yeah.
You have to add an Other Life Lessons by Sam Barry, or you're going to get the wrong book, and it won't be as much fun. I like the size of this book.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
This is a book you can fit almost in a man's suit, I'm going to say, if you have a big pocket, definitely in your trench coat.
Yes.
This is a book that you could throw in your purse when you're riding on the train. It's an easy read. I like that you didn't make the print too small for people like me.
Yeah.
And I like also how it's the setup of the whole book that is so easy to read and how you've broken it up.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, really tried hard to make it accessible to people. And do you like the cool front with the bumps? I really like the front cover has these.
Is
cool
that
buttons.
Harmonica in Braille? No.
We used to call
this in the 60s dotted Swiss.
But my,
that was
my,
the fabric.
My daughter took it and my teenage daughter took it and rubbed it against her cheek. She liked it so much. She thought it was very
No, cool. I do like the texture only because, you know, it's a good grip when you're reading it. But I do like the texture of it. And you've gotten some nicely little things here. It says Lee Oscar, world-renowned harmonicist. Says that, or harmonicist.
I don't know.
I want to read this quote. Here we go. This book makes starting out on the harmonica fun and makes life a little more fun, too. I think that says a lot about it, your
Lee,
book here.
Yeah, it's a great blurb from a great harp player. He played with War, for those of you who remember
War,
that.
War, really? Yes, it's all good. I mean, I would recommend this book just because, you know what I also like about this book? I think this would make a nice, like, gift. You put it, I would give this book with a harmonica, to tell you the truth.
I've gotten that a lot.
I think that would be like a great birthday present, or say you have a friend who's going through a rough time, because your book is so sweet and nice, and I don't mean that in a girly, gushy way. I mean just the feeling, you can tell you're coming from a place of love, the way you talk about your...
And thank you for saying that, and thank you for the praise. People have bought multiple copies, and I want the whole world to do that. Because this is the most important book ever written, Nancy. But
No, multiple copies. But I'm saying, I'm thinking right now that of getting this book for a friend of mine whose birthday is coming up, because nothing is as renewing in life as doing something you've always wanted to do. And I think music is such a big part of it. An example I'll give you is when I met my husband, his friends would tell me, oh, John, don't sing. You can't sing. And then I heard my husband sing, and I go, John, your friends are right, but that doesn't mean you can't learn to sing. So as a present, I bought him voice lessons.
That's so nice. That's
and
great.
My husband actually had his own recital after he took all of his lessons. Now, he's no Sam Barry, but he can hold a note now, and he can sing. And everyone, I think everyone, should sing or play an instrument if you're afraid of the big stuff. Start out small. Get how to play the harmonica and other life lessons.
Excellent.
Just start out small with this, Sam. I'm going to say that website again is www.redroom, just like the book is red, redroom.com, author Sam Barry. And, Sam, I don't want you, would you play me a little music before I'm going to introduce my next guest I have coming on?
I would. You want me to play a little something? I want to say, by the way, you did a great job on that Blues of Your Own at the beginning.
From my CD, Color Me Crazy.
That was very cool. I like the faux harmonica, and you probably saw in the book that I teach people how they can write their own blues. So,
oh,
I think you should.
Yes, it is in the book. I might have to cheat blowing up and down into my hand to play some of your things. I like that you have Mary Had a Little Lamb here, starting simple, but even. My favorite harmonica thing for people starting out by ear is The Streets of Laredo. I think that is
that's a
nice, easy transition, and you even say how to do the blues in here, which the blues I love. So give me something, because I want to play in our next guest, and I want
all
you to
right,
stay
we'll
online if, you, if you're not rushing off anywhere.
All right, thanks a lot. I can stay on for a little bit. That'd be wonderful. Here, let me play
a
little.
Yeah, stay on a little bit. Okay, and that's one more time, because I can't say it enough. How to Play the Harmonica and Other Life Lessons by Sam Barry. Buy his book, or his brother Dave will give you a noogie.
There you go.
All right, www.redroom.com, author Sam Barry. Play me something. Okay. Yeah, well, keep playing. I like it. Nice. Our next guest. Keep going. I didn't tell you to quit.
Oh, okay. I'll just keep playing then. Here we go.
Okay. All right. Our next guest is Chris Dalrymple. Two-time Emmy-winning filmmaker. He was the war machine. He worked on the war machine. The Defense of the United States, CBS Reports. And 1990 interview with Marlon Brando got him his second Emmy. He's done documentary films himself, and he has new film coming out called And Then. Chris, are you there? Christopher? Keep playing while I talk. Christopher, you're on the air.
All right.
Is he there? Keep playing, Dave. Go, I'll try again. Christopher, can you hear me? I don't know where he went. We'll just have Sam play.
What's that?
Keep playing, Sam. I'm waiting for him to say hello. Well, Sam, we lost him, but keep playing. Sam.
Yeah?
Play me something fancy.
Okay, something fancy. Actually, I was just playing Blackbird. Let me go ahead and play that.
Okay. Hello? Are you there?
Hello.
Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, we found Chris, Sam. Sam, meet Chris Dalrymple.
Hey, Sam.
Filmmaker extraordinaire, Emmy Award winner. Did you hear who's in that band, Chris?
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Well, don't be impressed, because not all those, they're great authors, but not all of them can play music very well. I once watched Stephen King strum the same chord through an entire song. And if you know anything about music, that's not what you're supposed to do.
No. At least two chords. At least two.
He was stuck on one for all.
Oh, okay.
But he had a great spirit.
That counts for a lot in music. It does.
So
I had to do all music for my own film and had to learn how to play it. I used GarageBand and a keyboard, but I
you did?
I taught myself.
Was this for your new film And Then?
Yeah, all that music is mine, and I don't know how to read or play music.
Well, you got to get how to play the harmonica and other life lessons.
I'm going out to get it today.
There you go. So, Chris has a new film coming out. Tell us all about it, Chris.
Well, it's a labor of love. It's my first fiction feature, and I wrote it about a year ago, and thought it would be a little easier than it turned out to be. It ended up taking until last week when I finally got it online, a year in the making. What can I say? It's a dark comedy.
I have seen clips of it, and I'm going to the screening on Monday. I love it, Chris. I think it's your best work, not to taint your Emmys at all, but the story is wonderful. The way you incorporated real people with actors, so it's almost surreal in that I'm not quite sure. I'm like, wait, is this really happening, this movie that I'm watching? Because it's almost like you're in it when you're watching.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I was inspired a lot by Cassavetes and Norman Mailer, who I knew back in his filmmaking period, and I liked the idea of, a lot of people have used amateurs or civilians to act. And so I thought I'd give it a shot, and
your characters were so real; they were real.
Yeah, they were real, but I wrote to their personalities. I mean, I picked people, and basically a lot of them playing themselves. They really don't have to do too much. Plus, when I to quote Marlon Brando, we're all acting.
Yes,
so,
we are all acting, but that's the quality of your film. And that website, again, could you just say it slowly?
Yes.
So that Sam can go to it? Wait, Sam, you listening? Ready?
Yes,
okay.
Listening in. I'm writing it down now.
Okay,
it's www, and you have to use the W's. You can't skip them, otherwise it dead ends. www.dalrymplepictures.com.
You better spell Dalrymple.
Dalrymple, D-A-L-R-Y-M, as in Michael, P as in Peter, L-E. DalrymplePictures.com.
Say, Sam, you know what? Chris, Sam has a real look. For your next film, Sam's got a real look.
Ooh, good.
He's got that real look going on. I got his picture right here in front of me.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned, remember you mentioned Kathy Goldmark, my wife and partner, in writing, and she has on that album that I mentioned, Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah.
May not have mentioned it, but that's what she produced, Stranger Than Fiction, with all those authors. One of them is Norman Mailer singing a song he wrote called The Alimony Blues, appropriately.
See?
You might enjoy. He was a wonderful guy. I met him a couple of times, and he's a cool guy. He's just a brilliant person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Did you meet
him
too, Chris?
But Norman, I never read Norman's books. I knew him when I started out in the business working for Leacock Pennybaker, who made Don't Look Back and Monterey Pop. Later, Pennybaker would go on to make The War Room without me, I might add. But I was just always struck by Norman's sort of feeling that, you know, anyone can be in a movie. So I...
Well, you and Sam have a lot in common then, because Sam's feeling about that anyone can and should play music.
Oh, I agree. I agree totally.
And your brave step forward, because I know how hard you worked on this film, Chris. And you have, I mean, you worked every angle of this. You were running with the camera. You were directing at the same time. You were hanging light. This was an incredible labor of love, as well as Sam's book.
I'm so impressed. I cannot imagine taking on making a film. It just sounds like so
but
much.
But Sam, if you wrote a book that says do anything.
That's a bit hard.
Yeah. No, but as I was doing it, I mean, every every day of production, which was about 10 weekends and a few Friday afternoons, one of them with Nancy, I kept saying, you know, what have I, why did I do this, you know?
It affected your home life, I'm sure, too. You have a daughter and in college now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And your wife, your lovely Eileen, the very fashionable,
yes,
lovely
who
Eileen.
Also did, who is the muse, gets a credit for muse and jewelry. She did
oh,
all the necklaces.
Jewelry. Oh.
That's all her necklaces in the movie.
Eileen Kowalski Jewelry. Does that
yeah.
have a website?
Not yet. We're putting that up this weekend.
All right. So stay
tuned. Yes, but I would, you know, on the way home, dragging all this equipment, which was quite heavy, I'd be drained. I'd feel awful. I'd say to her, I feel terrible. And she'd say, yes, but think how much worse you'd feel if you hadn't been making this.
And Sam works with his wife as well.
There you go.
Sam.
I recommend it highly. It's a great way to work.
It is great. We have our areas where we work well together and other areas that we keep totally separate. But
yes.
But I love it when we collaborate on stuff.
I love that on the album, Stranger Than Fiction CD that you have.
Yes.
I love the title of this song, Double Shot of My Baby's Love.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. A classic.
Talking about classics here, Sam, let me get some more info about Chris out. Chris, names just a couple of the films. You're just too shy sometimes. But you had a great documentary on fencing.
Yes, Choice of Weapons, which played in New York back in 2002 and also in the Angelica in Dallas, of all places.
Wow.
What else have I done?
You did Saturday Night Live, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did a two-hour sort of behind the scenes, a week in the life of an episode of Saturday Night Live back then, too, about 2002. That was...
And you know what's interesting about Chris Dalrymple's film then? Is that he did it before the book came out, and the story started coming out about what was really going on backstage at Saturday Night Live. Like, they wouldn't laugh at each other's jokes on purpose during the readings. And
yeah, that was a labor of love. I'd always wanted to be a fly on the wall there, and some people who had seen my fencing movie, six months later, called me. You know how people, they'll say, we don't have anything for you now, but we'll be in touch. You never believe that stuff. 6 months later, they actually called and said, what do you know about Saturday Night Live? And I said, well, I submitted a film to them the first year they were on the air back in 75. I worked there, recutting the summer versions of the shows, the reruns. So I already had an in and knew a little of the mechanics when I did that show. So it was a lot of fun. And I shot a third of that one, too. I had two other cameramen, but I shot a third of that one as well as directing it and writing
it.
Well,
I know you're a very good director because I've been in some of your films. I was
yes, you have.
Your first pilot, I believe.
Yes, I did. I did a comedy pilot called Please Stand By with Nancy and a great group of people from the First Amendment, very talented, most talented group of people I've ever met.
Amen.
And that was way back I'll just say in the Reagan administration.
That's, again, Sam, with your book, and the both of you are just my heroes in that you both went forward and saying, just do it. And, again, he just did it. And that was his first. And then you also did a documentary on your father.
Yes, I did. I did one on my father that was a way for me to sort of stretch storytelling because at that point I was getting paid to make television, and which is fairly sort of constricted, the form. And I really envied filmmakers and people that could sort of just do whatever they liked. So it was a chance to stretch my storytelling abilities, and it ended up having a life surprisingly much bigger than I ever imagined. It touched people.
It did. Say the title of it again, please.
The Perfect Gentleman. The Perfect Gentleman. Actually, now that I know how to make music, I couldn't use the music that was in it. This old jazz song, which Sony won't give me the rights to, so I really couldn't do anything commercial.
Hey, work something out with Sam. Sam, you got some music for my friend?
No, it has to be this song. It has to be this particular song. And I couldn't use the performance of it. I can get the publishing. So now that I know how to do music, I can literally recreate that song. So I plan to do that and make that film available. It has a number of great interviews and great characters. My father spent a lot of time in Puerto Rico in the late 50s.
Well, let's preface this, Chris, by saying your father was a well-known artist.
Well, no, actually, he wasn't well-known. He worked very hard. He was a very talented artist, but he worked very hard at not being well-known. He felt being a communist from the 40s, he really didn't want to be part of the problem that celebrity would have brought him, so he just made the stuff and sold it and worked very hard to remain anonymous. And
Is there a site where people can go to this, Chris?
Not at the moment. I really can't show it anywhere, can't do anything with it, but I will change the music, and then I will re-release it in some form that people can see it. Because
I'm sure
it's,
that maybe there'll be a link to your And Then.
So, perhaps, yeah. We have a Facebook fan page for And Then where people can go. I don't know how to get to it myself.
Tell me. What is it?
It's I don't know. It's basically the title And Then. If you can get to that page through Facebook, it has production stills, behind-the-scenes production stills, and a one-minute teaser trailer that people can watch, and a link
Facebook.
To the...
Okay, and then on Facebook.
Yeah, try that. I'm not sure how to get to it. The URL has too many exclamations, percentage signs, and asterisks in it for me to say it over the phone.
All
but,
right, I'm gonna look for it later.
Yeah.
What is your website again? Because And Then, Sam, this is the great part, okay? I know you're here. You're here for a little while. Maybe you can send this to your brother, Dave, and he can watch it, too, because it is a dark comedy where you're laughing, where you're going, should I be laughing at this? This seems wrong in a little bit of a way to laugh at this. I'm not giving anything away because I want people to go to the website and see this. But you can actually see the movie.
Yes.
Cool. I will look it up. I'll tell you what. Let's both hook up on Facebook. I'm on there too, so I'll.
Okay. Terrific.
So let's look for each other, and then show me with that website, or I'll probably see it linked there.
Yeah definitely. For
like
sure.
And your website again, Chris? Say it.
www.dalrymplepictures.com.
Okay. Sam, I think you sound like that voice of a man leaving me. So
I am just about to run, so I didn't want to be rude and dive in. But
no. I'm going to stay on, Chris, because I've got more guests coming up.
Okay.
Sam, How to Play the Harmonica and Other Life Lessons.
Thank you, Nancy.
Sam Barry, and that's at Red Room, redroom.com/author/Sam Barry. How to Play the Harmonica and Other Life Lessons. Get this book. You need it now.
All right.
And Chris, stay
on.
All right.
Okay.
Hey, nice meeting you, Chris. Good luck.
Same here, but you too.
See you on Facebook.
I love it. All my guests are becoming friends. How nice is that? that's great, Chris. No, your movie is really doing well. And as a matter of fact, I have some other documentary filmmakers who are joining us today, but yours isn't a documentary. Yours is a laugh out loud, laugh inside comedy. Well written, Chris. I do have to say this is a well written piece of work.
Well, thank you.
I love the naturalness of the dialogue, the flow of the dialogue, and it was very entertaining. And I have to say, I can't give anything away, but I was surprised. There's no way to guess this plot line, people. There is no way, because things happen in it, and you go, what? You can't do that in a movie, and Chris does.
Oh,
and
thank you.
And he tricks me. But And Then is worth seeing it. And Chris is going to stay on the line because I'm going to introduce him to some more filmmakers.
Okay.
Okay, let me see who's on first. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Anton Evangelista. Hello, Nancy.
Anton,
good morning.
Anton Evangelista, one half of the players I have coming on today. Let me see if I can find your buddy here. I think he's on.
Nancy, how are you?
Oh, there's John. Okay, Anton, okay. Chris, this is Chris Dalrymple is also
Hello.
Online.
Hi there.
Hi, Chris. Nancy, I don't mean to plug my other film because I totally related to Chris. The use of using non-prose for his film. I had a very, very similar situation with another film that I made called Intervention, which was the same principle of utilizing real people to play these characters in my film. So I take my hat off to Chris, and congratulations to you on your incredible achievement. I totally related to everything he was saying about him.
A labor of love, right?
Yes, yes.
And let
me tell you, the only way it gets done.
Yes.
Now, I'll let you know, John's on the line too, but first I'll introduce, because I clicked on Anton Evangelista first. You're an actor, you're a director, you were in The Cotton Club, Chrissy's Honor, Law and Order, Search for Tomorrow, As the World Turns, and Ron Howard's Ransom. Keep
yes.
busy there. And
yeah.
What was the, so then you went on to directing. You sort of slid hats.
Yeah.
You went into directing. Wait, there's more. And then, John, are you there?
I'm here, Nancy, and I'd first like to thank you for having us on.
Oh, this is John Galasso, the producer of this film I just saw. People, you got to go check this out. I'm just going to be your film guru, everybody listening.
We love it.
And then you're going to go see Just Laugh. Just Laugh, I'm very excited about, was featured at the Friars Film Festival. It was chosen out of, 300 boys?
Yeah,
at least, yeah, it was quite
yeah.
a few.
300 or more films that were submitted from around the world, and this film was chosen. And it's a great film exploring. Oh, too bad Sam hung up, because his book, too, has to do with feeling better by playing music.
Yes.
This is feeling better and healing through laughter. And it goes over in layers. It intersperses real celebrities.
Yes.
Speaking about laughter, like Pat Cooper, who's hilarious on the film, and my favorite, of course, Fran Capo, talking about comedy and healing. But it explains the dynamics of comedy and what makes us laugh, which again ties into your film, Chris Dalrymple. Because it's a dark comedy, and laughing about dark things at the same time is interesting. But this book, there was so much I didn't know about laughter, because you had real doctors on it, then you'd have comedians on it, then you'd have real people on it. So you pretty much covered all the bases, but I learned a lot about it, and I really enjoyed it, Just Laugh. And more information, www.justlaugh.org. Okay, now you guys can talk.
I think
good. I'll let Anton. Anton could start off.
Okay, Anton.
Well, I have this crazy sense of humor. I'm a great audience for anyone out there who's funny. And so I always sensed that, you know, obviously when you laugh you feel better. But, and I wanted to explore that more. I thought, but what actually happens to the body when you laugh? And so when I first met John, we kind of shared some war stories, from our past, and you know, he actually explained to me about a very bleak period in his life. I mean, he'll explain that better when John speaks. But anyway, I said to him, I said, you know, I always had this idea of incorporating everyone's best joke. Everyone has at least one good joke they like.
Oh, you're fading out. Are you walking?
No. I would laugh.
All right, you're fading out. Anton? John, are you there? Now I
yes,
know.
I'm here.
Okay, you're going to have to talk for him, because he must have walked into a black void.
Okay, yeah.
Black comedy void. But he, you began talking with him when your daughter was doing extra work on one of his films.
Yes, actually.
Which was Intervention, I believe, right?
Yes, and that's how we met. And my daughter, Victoria, she actually, she was an extra in one of the films. And from day one, it just, Anton and I, we just really,
and,
we just,
for those
just
of you who didn't hear me, John, please pronounce your name. I don't want to mispronounce it.
Okay.
Galasso?
It's John Galasso.
Oh, Galasso. Oh, I did well. Yes, John, and then they began talking, and you were in a great deal of pain yourself.
Yeah, I had a very, very bad back and neck injury. I have three herniated discs in my lower back, and I have a herniated disc in my neck. And at one point in my life, I was, like, just really down and out. It's a very long story, but not to focus on the negative. On the positive, Anton and I was telling him about my story, and basically just one thing led to another, and we started talking about laughter and healing and just a variety of different things, and basically that's how the documentary got born. And
I think
that was over three and a half.
Laugh.
It was over, just left, and that was over 3.5 years ago. And basically, at that point, it took us over 3 years to complete. And it's,
now, Chris, you'll be interested in this. They also used garage sand.
Yeah, and then
as I was watching the film, because I have my own cable show, which airs every Friday night on Channel 86 and 83 in New York City, worldwide on the net, I was listening and I was turning to Fran Capo, comedian Fran Capo, who's also in the film, and saying, wait a minute, I know this editing system.
That's
Anton,
true.
Are you back?
I'm back.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that. I'm actually...
It sounds like you're taking a shower, Anton. What's going on?
I'm in my car, and I'm by the Newark airport, and I always lose the connection whenever I'm by here. So anyway,
Newark in itself, the poor victim of numerous jokes, is a black comedy. But you're now, let me ask the two of you from Just Laugh. What do you think? Chris made a I laugh at Chris's movie, and I was questioning whether I should be laughing. How do you two feel? His movie And Then? Black comedy, sort of like Cassavetes' style. What do you think about it? Is it okay to laugh at that?
Well, you know, what we learned from the different doctors and psychologists and a variety of different people, we found that humor is a lot of people view humor differently. You know, where one person might laugh at something or another person doesn't find it funny, and that's why not to talk about Chris's film, but that's why we wanted
why
to
not? Let's
laughter.
Talk about Chris's film, too. No, it's, the laughter does. So people laugh for different reasons, you're saying.
And laughter, it has the same effect. It doesn't matter why you're laughing, but laughter has the same effect in people regardless of why they're laughing. One of the doctors, Dr. Einhorn, who holds laughter yoga sessions in Manhattan, he explained all this to us. This was a learning process for us, that if you laugh, it doesn't matter why you're laughing, but you reap the same benefits as a person who's maybe laughing at a joke or a person who's just laughing for no reason at all. So if people do find Chris's film funny, they're going to get the same benefits as to somebody else who's laughing at a joke or for any other reason. So,
in other words, the brain can't distinguish between simulated laughter and spontaneous laughter. So, for example, if you're laughing, you know, from after hearing a joke, or if you're, for example, in Dr. Einhorn's classes, he actually has these exercises where, you know, it's like every day situation.
Was that the part of the film where he had them doing you're a bear laugh, you're a happy laugh, excited.
Yes,
so improvisation was part of it too, because
exactly
again,
so,
like Sam Barry's book about freeing yourself to do anything.
So what he explains, and it's covered in the film, is that your brain cannot distinguish between the two laughters, or if it's a spontaneous laughter or if it's like a forced laughter. Your brain can't distinguish between the two, and it's still releasing the endorphins, which are...
So like when you laugh when someone falls down.
Yeah. So you're deriving
laugh, but
the
it's
same,
funny.
Exactly. You're deriving the same health benefits, you know, as a result of, you know, whether it's spontaneous or simulated laughter.
All right. Well,
so
I have a question now for Anton and Chris Dalrymple, Anton Evangelista and Chris Dalrymple.
Well, if I could just make
when
one
you were
quick
doing
thing.
Your films, okay, and you both were making these films and you both were directing them, how do you judge what you think people are going to laugh at?
Well, I would hope that you laugh first. I mean, I have to laugh. I'm the first audience of my film, just as Chris is the first audience of his film, and it has to be funny to you first, and then, you know, hopefully everyone else agrees, and kind of know when you start having some screening, you know, you'll know if it works or not. It's kind of like what I'm sure what a comedian goes through when he tests jokes for the first time.
And Chris?
Yeah, definitely. I concur with Anton. Although I have to say my yardstick was Billy Wilder and Ernst Lubitsch. I figure those are my comedy models. If I can get close to what they did, they sort of were able to do this, get people to laugh at other people's misfortunes. So that's sort of what I was aiming at. But yeah, the key is it's got to start with the writer, and then we go from there.
And Chris, how long is your film?
75 fun-filled minutes, laugh-filled minutes.
Yes, the ending. I purposely have not seen the ending because I want to save that for the screening. And how long is Just Laugh?
70 minutes.
Hey, you know, we could do a double bill with you guys.
That's what I was thinking. Here you go, a double feature.
We could do
just to comment on what Anton and what Chris said, I think that the answer to your question should be that everybody should go out and should see Just Laugh and also see Chris's film. And then everybody can decide what's funny and what's not based
on
the
film. Well, actually, I would do Just Laugh as a precursor to Chris's film because now you know... You know, why you're laughing, and I think that will double up on why I'm laughing. As I said, I was questioning myself.
Yeah,
Nancy,
also,
I always like the way you think. That sounds wonderful.
And double up on that. Yes, John, I know you do. And for those of you who want more information on Just Laugh, let me give you that website again. It's www.justlaugh.org. And it's interesting to me because you're both... You know, these are labors of love. No one does a film, especially the way, you know, you both have done it, John and Anton, and you too, Chris. I could see that a lot of it was field work on all your part. You were out there in the trenches doing this. This was one sitting back and doing it. You were hands-on.
Yeah, a friend of mine in Hollywood I spoke to last night said, directing never gets easier. He says, decades of experience. He said, it never gets easier, but in your case, it's about to.
Oh, and how do you feel, Anton?
Well, you know, it's kind of like you when you first start on any creative mission, life gets in the way. So it's kind of like, you know, it's always a juggling act between, you know, you're kind of like on this one-man war. It's like Orson Welles said, an artist needs his brush, a writer needs his pen, but a director needs an army.
It's true. Now, John, did you jump in there? Were you giving your input as the producer?
Oh yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's quite funny because Anton and I, when we had gotten together to do this film, it's going on 4 years now. You know, we just sat down and we were sharing ideas, and it was amazing how. You know, this project started out, we never dreamed it would go to the extent that it went. It escalated as we just went along. And I think Anton and I, we were both amazed at how when we started telling people, whether it was everyday people or celebrities, about what we were doing, it just escalated. Everybody just jumped on board. Where a lot of times, I think in a lot of films, which I learned from Anton, it's like, it's kind of hard, you know, to get things going, but in our case...
What is your experience, John, in films? I know that Anton was an actor-director. I know that Chris was an editor-filmmaker. What did you come with?
Well, actually, I came with a lot of ideas, and as far as film goes, I helped Anton with his film Intervention. I did some work on Intervention, and then as a result of that, I also had some... I was one of the spokespeople for Celebrex, and I did a couple little odds and ends where I did some industrial films.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, just some, in fact,
now, who thought of the title? Which one of you?
Just Laugh. I think it kind of just evolved.
You know, it's like one day we were just saying, well, what do we call this? I mean, how do we encapsulate this movie? And it was just like, well, you know, I don't know who said it first, but we just said, well, just laugh. Or
you know what's interesting about my guest today? I just realized that both of you have two-word titles, Just Laugh and Then. If you were an actor studying Meisner technique, it would be Just Laugh Just laugh.
You know, Nancy, I think part of it, the way we did get the title, is so many times that Anton and I were together, and like something would happen, whether it would be serious or funny, and we would like kind of look at each other and we would go, you know, you just gotta laugh. And all of a sudden, escalated, and then the title was just laugh. I don't even know how we got it ourselves.
And Chris,
but even till today, something will happen.
You'll just say, just laugh.
And we'll go, you know, you just got to laugh. Look at life. You just got to laugh.
That's what I'm saying. You could say it so many ways. And Chris, then, how did you come up with that title, Chris Dalrymple?
I wanted something that was an anti-title. I wanted something that was open-ended and that was easy to remember. That's key to it. It's easy to remember.
Well, both of your films, Just Laugh, is easy to remember, and then... very, very, it almost seems like we need one more two-word film in here. Just laugh, and then just laugh again, and then two. So we'll keep it going with all the laughter. And so what are your hopes for Just Laugh now? What are you, I know you were in one major film festival, and now...
Well, right now, Nancy, we were accepted in two other festivals,
which
are coming up shortly. And I'd also like, Anton can explain about the festivals, but prior to that, I'd like to just say, right now we're in the process of looking for a distributor.
Okay.
We're looking to get the word out. We're looking, we're just exploring different things, and we're looking to see where the film has a home.
You know, something that comes to my mind, John and Anton, is that I think your film would be ideal for patients in any hospital.
Actually, several doctors have suggested that already. So that's another option that we are exploring. And so there's like a whole lot of different things going on. I mean, looking for a distributor. We have the festivals coming up. And, you know, maybe Anton would like to explain a little bit about the festivals. And like I said, the main thing now is, you know, to see where the film has a home. And hopefully in the near future, maybe there's a distributor listening to your show right now.
That would be nice.
Anton, you want to tell them about the festivals?
Yeah, well, the festivals is always a great opportunity for any time you have an opportunity for anyone to see your film is great. I mean, it's just a wonderful forum for any film to be seen and given a chance to, you know, to share the vision. But I always felt that, you know, this Just Laugh has such a broad audience. I mean, this is really a universal message. You know, yes, definitely approaching hospitals and any kind of wellness centers, any the holistic community, of course, would definitely embrace, you know, this type of a message. Of course, you know, any kind of television, like Learning Channel, Channel 13, public television.
Oh, yes, definitely. It's not just, I don't want to misrepresent it. It's not just informative, it's entertaining as well. It's an entertaining film.
Yes, yes. We try to make it informative and entertaining so that, you know, hopefully, you're reminded of something that you already know. We all know how to laugh. We all know it makes us feel good. But at least, you know, what we try to explore is really so to make people aware of, you know, really there's a lot of good that's happening when you laugh.
I remember reading somewhere that laughter and crying are the same physical.
Yes.
They
really are. It's a release. It's a way of releasing. It's very cathartic. It's a way of self-healing because you need to, you know, it's funny. When we were interviewing a lot of psychologists, I was asking a lot of these type of questions too, like what happens in different situations, sometimes unfortunately in tragic situations. It's not uncommon for people to laugh. It's not that they're being disrespectful, you know, someone just died or, you know, their parent just died or...
No, it's not anywhere. It's a release. I have a friend who actually in traffic makes me laugh because when someone cuts him off, instead of getting angry, he waves at them like he knows them. Like he actually knows them. He waves just genetically like, hey, it's me, hi, you know, like that. And they're looking, they were like yelling, screaming at him one minute, and they're thinking, oh, do I know him?
But see, that's cool because, you know, she's making a conscious choice, you know, to change a stressful situation into a positive one, you know, even in those few moments. And that's really cool. And I guess that's kind of what we're saying with our film.
Yes.
It's John. I would just like to add to that, you know, basically in our film, too, that's what Fran Capel said, but with relating to a tragedy of when she lost her father. And she said how, you know, basically it was such a bleak period of her life, but they used laughter when he was diagnosed with cancer. And not only Fran Capel, we had Valerie Smaldone. She was the host of 106.7 Light FM for a long period of time, and she had cancer, and she described her story. And she said how she used humor during that bleak period in her life, and many others that we talked about. The film, Ray Garvey, he runs the comedy club in the Borgata in Atlantic City, and he did the same thing.
Wait, you know what's happening, John? You got to roll up your window. I'm getting a wind tunnel effect here.
Oh, okay. I don't know what that's from, because actually...
No, it's not you. It's Anton. Anton, I'm getting wind, or you got the window down in the car?
No. I don't have... Maybe I'm going through a
okay,
maybe it's
now
just the
it's
area.
Now it's better. I couldn't hear John. The other thing,
okay.
Now, I want to get, before we get to the close of the show, I lost Chris somewhere along the line, but Chris Dalrymple... his film, and then before we end, I want to get the website for Just Laugh is www. Guys, come on, stay with me.
Justlaugh.org.
Justlaugh.org. www.justlaugh.org. Can people order this film if they? How can you get this to the public? Is this out for sale yet? Or?
They can contact us if they're interested in learning more about the film. The film is not actually available for sale yet, but you know, but they can certainly contact us and we'll keep them updated. We'll have them on our list.
Oh, as it gets, yes, on the list. Okay, that's good too. Or to find out, or perhaps have a showing of your film.
Yeah, we're actually updating our website as we speak to indicate where our next two film festivals will be. And certainly, you know, they're more than welcome to come down. They could see the film, and you know, we'll be there, so we'll get a chance to talk some more in person.
Oh,
and
okay.
Hopefully we would like to have the film available for Christmas, so that's in the works also.
You'd like to do... I didn't hear the last part, I'm sorry.
I said we were trying to possibly get the film available for Christmas, so it would be good, you know, that anybody that is...
Yes, that would make a wonderful gift. You can get, you heard earlier we had How to Play the Harmonica and Other Life Lessons. This has been a very healing show today.
Yes, it is.
Full of dark comedy and humor, and that's www.justlaugh.com. This has been John Velasco, and Anton, I love your name, Evangelista.
thank you.
Dalrymple's film, before I go, I want to just plug his film one time, and then I'm going to the screening Monday. I can't wait to see how it ends. And you can find out more about Chris at, hold on, I lost, and I'm going to spell his name, DalrymplePictures.com. So you've got two things or three things to go to now today. We've had Sam Barry on How to Play the Harmonica and Other Life Lessons, Chris Dalrymple and his new film, And Then, and John Galasso and Anton Evangelista. Go check it out. Just Laugh, everybody. That's all
you've
got to do. Just Laugh.
Nancy, we want to thank you for taking the time and inviting us to be on your show. And you're doing great work, and it's always a pleasure to meet you and see you.
Definitely. I want to thank my guest today, Just Laugh. Who doesn't want to just laugh?
I totally repeat what Anton said. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure talking with you, and thank you for coming to the Friars Club Film Festival and being a part of, you know, our day.
And good luck with it. It's a great film. I highly recommend it. If you have somebody who needs cheering up, bring them to this film, and hopefully go to their website, justlaugh.com, and you're going www.justlaugh.org, and you're going to find out more information when you can purchase this film, hopefully, or just get more information. It's a perfect gift for someone who needs healing and laughter. Thank you. This has been Nancy Lombardo on ComedyConcepts.com.
Thank you, Nancy.
Bye, guys.
Bye now.
Just left.